The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, it's me, the giant head. Hello. Hello. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States. No 2 minutes after, no 1 minute after. It's exactly 11 p.m. It's 8 p.m. on the West Coast of the United States. It's 2 p.m. in Sydney, Australia, and it's 10 p.m. where I'm sitting here in the Ilhan Omar's district in Northeast Minneapolis. I am Jim Peters, and welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. And I think this is, I didn't bother to check, is this show 74, or no, 84. It's show 84, if I'm correct. Right. And it's Tuesday, February 13th, 2024. Now, why is that important? It's important because today, you don't know this, but I'm telling you this, today is World Radio Day, as designated by the United Nations. And that plays into our show today because the executive advisor to the United Nations for World Radio Day is Michael Harrison, the founder and editor of Talkers Magazine, the preeminent Bible of talk media in the United States. And he's our guest tonight. We got the guy, the actual guy who's running it. Yes, I know. I know you're sitting there. You're sitting in your bed and looking at the phone like, what, Jim? How did you do that? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how we did it, but we did. We got the actual guy running who runs World Radio Day from the United Nations is going to be on this show. Wouldn't you know it? Now, we taped the interview yesterday. It's the first time I've ever broken the rule. As a general rule, because it's so late on the East Coast, we offer all guests the opportunity to tape their interviews ahead of time, but only in the afternoon. We never tape them more than a few hours ahead of time. But for this, we did. Because he's a very, very busy guy. Today was the day, so we did it yesterday. And yeah, so we're going to talk to Michael Harrison about the history of radio. It's basically radio, you know, you'll hear the interview. Radio is basically on a commercial basis. It's about 100 years old. It depends on how you define it and what part of the country. But commercial radio started anywhere from 1920 to 1925. Here in the United States, it started around 1920. Or 1922, there's it's kind of hard to how you define it too. It wasn't the first station ever run commercials, but the first commercial radio station that actually subsisted off of selling commercials and no other business model was actually here in Minneapolis. KSTP AM, started by Stanley Hubbard in 1924. It was the first commercial radio station in the world, apparently. And that, like I said, as you define that as a radio station that had that was its business model up till that time, and most of the time after that too, through most of the 1920s, most of the radio stations in America were arms of other businesses and were mostly used for promotional purposes. So, like for example, I mean, RCA owned a whole bunch of radio stations. As a promotion to sell radios. That was the idea. So, excuse me, I pick my nose. I can't pick my friends, but I can pick my nose. So anyway, Michael Harrison's here. So, let me show you, we got a really cool, look at it. Watch this, look at this. Got a really cool logo for this. That's the official logo for World Radio Day on top of, in our thumbnail template thing in there. It's pretty damn cool, isn't it? God, we got it going on. Who would have thought it? Okay, so he's on tonight. Tomorrow, Jeff Meyer will be joining us. And also before Jeff Meyer, I know you won't believe this either, Vlad Putin, the president of Russia, is coming on. You know, Tucker Carlson thought he interviewed, what was that? Only 2 hours. No, Vlad Putin's calling in tomorrow. Why? Because it's Valentine's Day and he loves everyone. So he's going to spend 6 to 8 minutes talking about love. And then we're going to talk to Jeff. And we'll maybe talk to Jeff about love too. Let's see. Let's see how that goes. So yeah, that's tomorrow, Thursday night. Nathan Wooster from the Epoch Times. He does both politics and environmental stuff, energy stuff, for the Epoch Times out of New York City. We're going to talk to him. We had a wonderful chat with him. A previous podcast on radio shows, I think that was this. It was 2-3 months ago. His third or fourth appearance with me. So we're going to do it again. Love the guy. He's fantastic. Next Monday, Larry Newman, our bail bondsman extraordinaire from Missouri, Joplin, Missouri, and also a certified Bigfoot investigator. He's joining us, and we're just going to basically shoot the shit. Larry can't make he's on our month in review panel, which happens the last Monday of every month now. We're going to do the second one on the 26th, and he can't make it. So I said, why don't you come on early? I said, fine. Okay, sounds good. So he's on next Monday. Next Tuesday, a week from today, this is really interesting. We got a guy named Davis Hunt. He's joining us. He's the editor of The Pamphleteer out of Nashville, Tennessee. That is mostly, not entirely, but mostly a local news publication for Nashville. And he's going to talk, he talks mostly about local news and how to go about local news, because it's very unfortunate. Local news is the only thing really that seems necessary right now, but nobody's really interested in it. That's the way I view this. Now, and I have to tell you, Nathan Wooster, who's going to be on Thursday, recommended we talk to Davis Hunt. He actually pushed that, and we did that. And so he's coming on a week from today. So now you can call into the show tonight. Our interview with Michael is pre-taped, so we can't take your call during that. But you can text in. There's all sorts of ways. We got a new way now. You can actually call. You can dial on your phone. Before, it was the video, and we're still doing the video for sure. Matter of fact, we're pushing that because we're apparently the first talk show in America to actually take video phone calls, supposedly. So you can call in with your camera by going to jimandnight.com/call and pushing the big blue button at the top of the screen. It's very simple. You end up in a preview page. You get to check your camera and mic to make certain they're working. Then you push the join button on the bottom, and you're in the queue. And when I'm done yakking, I will put you on the screen. That's the way it works. If you don't want your picture on the screen, you can call in. Well, this is even simpler, just like on a regular, like on a radio show. This is not a radio show, but you can call in. Number is 563-999-3435. This is brand new. We just started this at the beginning of this month. We've only been doing this is only like the fourth show, because last week we only had two. So, you can call in. You do that. You call in and talk to me, you know. And then the other way is you can text in real time. We've always had the text thing, but now I have a monitor off to my right. So if you catch me looking over here, I got both the phone calls that come in and the text messages that come in are on the same screen. And then on the screen in front of me, I have the video calls that come in. It's all very complicated. It's worth the trouble, I think. So you can text us in real time, and I get them. I get those texts while the show is on, 408-458-5088, two different telephone numbers, okay? And also, you can text us from we get texts 24/7 at that number. So, you know, if you decide you want to, you know, you're out somewhere and you want to recommend your girlfriend to come on the show as a guest, I'm not going to book her. I won't, but if you want to anyway, you can text me. You can also call, you can call that number and leave a voicemail too, 408-458-5088. You got 30 seconds to say whatever you want. If you're really interested, we might clip the audio and put you on the air. So that's the way all that works. So tonight, like I said, we got Michael Harrison coming up in the B block. the A block's always news, and then the C block is usually, I don't know how you want to put it, it's paranormal stuff or science news or stuff that's not really news. I think the reason I'm talking about the science stuff is nobody talks about it. You know, there's also like there's just something I'm going to tell you about today that I bet you haven't heard at all. I'm going to preview it right now. We're going to do this on the C block after Michael's interview. But this company set the satellite up into orbit because they want to test a quantum drive. Now, this is a propulsion system that doesn't output any it contradicts Newtonian physics. That's a better way to put it. There's no, you know, cause and effect, equal and opposite reaction, none of that shit. The thing supposedly just works. Now, they've tested it on, I'm going to leave this. But the thing is, have you heard about that in the news? No, you haven't. You haven't heard about that at all. No one talks about this shit. You know, it really bothers me. I brought up this several times on this program talking about the UFOs. We already know how to fly faster than the speed of light. But you didn't know that, did you? No, we can't do it because right now we can't muster the energy to do it. It would take more electricity than is generated on the entire planet Earth to even a small spacecraft to do this. But we know how to do it. Now, supposedly, NASA is going to send a test spacecraft up in the next year or two to actually try it, which means it would be the first thing ever produced by humans that ever went faster than the speed of light. This was like, I don't know if you followed Star Trek. There was a guy named Zebulon, the guy on Star Trek who was actually credited, the character who's credited for inventing faster-than-light travel. Well, in that time frame, in the Star Trek universe, they did it in 2050. So, and I don't think any people are going to be aboard this test spacecraft. The guy's name is Sonny Houston. He's the guy who's doing this. Not Sonny Houston. That's the chick on the View. No. I think she should ride in that spacecraft. That's what I think. We'll put her in that. Oh, wow. Look, you just went faster than the speed of light. Can't come back. Oh, man. You know, they talk about this about Mars, too. There's a lot of people that are talking about the fact that the first people we send to Mars might not be able to come back. They might end up having to live there permanently. I don't know if this is true. You know, there's some company that said they were going to do this. They're going to send people on a one-way trip to Mars, and 200,000 people applied for this. I mean, you are committing to living the rest of your life on Mars, no matter what happens. I don't know. You're not going to the symphony, that's for damn sure. Okay, so, So first half of the show, the first block is news. So what happened today? Well, now this kind of made the news, and I'm using this as a springboard to something else. Bob Edwards, a longtime host of All Things Considered, a National Public Radio, passed away. He was 76. The reason I'm bringing that up is I can't stand National Public Radio. I can't. And I'm talking about the two major talk shows, Morning Edition and All Things Considered. It's like that is so damn precious to me. I want to pull my hair out, or Fresh Air and Terry Gross. Oh, Jesus, stop it. You know, I'm sure Terry's got her little note cards and she's reading her questions, you know, and she's so damn happy and she's so bright. Fuck you. It's like, God, okay. All right, I'm proud of my interviewing abilities. I am. And we sent a press release out for this World Radio Day thing, and Michael Harrison had very nice things to say about me. He's very nice. I'm not reading my questions off a card. Thank you. It's like I do my research, and I'm sure she does too. She's like, yeah, she's got a little card. She's got to read her little card. And Robert Smigel, my God. I mean, seriously, it just bugs the crap out of me. I can't stand it. And I know people love this. The liberals, they just go nuts about this shit. You know, it's like, oh my God, it's so informative. And it sounds like something out of 1940s movie. That's what it sounds like. There's no, it does not sound contemporary, you know? Well, anyway, maybe you can point to Edwards as starting that, you know, because I think he was the first host of All Things Considered, I think. when it started. I'm serious. I think it started in like 1976. It's like, Jesus, I don't know. Anyway, so the reason I brought that up is there was another article today in Barrett News Media, which is not, it's a basically, it's a radio and television trade publication. And it was written, hold on, I want to tell you who wrote this, because this, I'm going to post this on our blog. It was written by a guy named Rick Schultz. And his contention of the article is called New Media Surges Where Traditional Outlets Can't Compete. And he has come to the conclusion that basically the nail has now been driven into the coffin of traditional media, legacy media, because everyone's noticed that they lie through their teeth. And he's using it as an example, as a benchmark, and I'll take this. It's as good a benchmark as any. Michael Rappaport, the actor, who's been, you know, he's on Twitter and he's bitching about everything. Well, and he's been doing this for years. But suddenly, he's suddenly come to the conclusion that he's been had, you know? And I don't know if this did it, but he uses an example on another podcast about the fact that what was called in the conservative circles, the very fine people comment that Donald Trump made at Charlottesville or about Charlottesville when that happened. And so that was, what, about 2018, 2017, something like that? It was the beginning of Trump's presidency. And so, you know, there was this riot, essentially a riot in Charlottesville. It was not an insurrection because it wasn't at the Capitol. Riots at the Capitol are insurrections, but it wasn't at the Capitol, so it was not an insurrection. It was just a riot. And a woman got killed. She got run over car in what appeared to be a very deliberate fashion. And Trump has been credited, if you want to call it, or has been alleged, of having made this quote about the fact that there were very fine people on both sides. Now, that's not what he said. That's the thing. That quote has been clipped at the beginning and the end. And Rappaport said he finally, after years of bitching about this, he saw the whole clip and realized that is not what... No, Trump was actually trying to say the opposite. And the way the words came out, the media, the mainstream media, clipped this clip so that basically all you saw, all they showed their viewers was Donald Trump saying, well, there's very fine people on both sides. That's not what he said. It isn't. Now, we've known that. I've known that for years since this happened. To this day, Joe Biden still talks about this. He still uses this as an example of Donald Trump's assholeness, basically. And the thing is, it's just not true. It isn't. That's not what he said. And Rappaport went on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he said, my God, I finally saw the whole thing and realized it's a lie. And it is. It is a lie. And so I don't, you know, Rick Schultz, the guy who wrote this article, he basically uses this as kind of a benchmark. He says, people are starting to realize that mainstream media has been continuously lying for at least 8 years, if not longer. Now, they've been doing more of it now, and they do it. And as I was talking, we were talking to Tim Conaway. I want to thank him, our guest last night. Now, Tim is running for president, but Tim is also, his career, he was the editor of over a dozen very popular magazines, like Men's Health, one of the car ones. And, of course, his claim to fame is he was the editor of Hustler magazine at the height of its popularity. For 15 years, he did that. And, you know, we were talking about this, about the fact that it's just not that lately the media lies. It's that the lies are getting closer and closer together. They used to kind of like lie and then lay back and kind of, you know, wait for the shit to blow over and then they go do it again. Now that there's no space in between them. And so I understand now I have liberal friends who think I'm highly uninformed. They think that the stuff I talk about on the show is complete bullshit, and basically it's conservative talking points. And because I know what thinking, and they're thinking, well, why would the New York Times lie to me? What's their motivation for doing that? And that's a really good question, because you on the surface you think they have no motivation for lying. You would think that, but they do. the motivation is or twofold. First of all, they are all completely in the tank for the Democratic Party. That's been going on for years and years and years. You can go back 150 years on that. Most journalists have always been liberal. That it's kind of just one of the things about people of a certain personality type are attracted to that job, and they happen to usually be liberal. Not always. So because of that, I mean, and Conaway was talking about this last night. You go back to even to the Civil War. Since the Civil War, newspapers in the United States have always basically had They had a declared political slant. They were either liberal or conservative. I mean, this still goes on to this day. The Wall Street Journal is a conservative newspaper. The New York Times is a liberal newspaper. But the problem now is that instead of just being, there's a difference between bias and propaganda. You know, bias is we are going to go to bat for our people, you know, but we're still going to tell the truth. And when our people screw up, and that's what I'm trying to do here. This show has an obvious bias. It's conservative. But man, if you get some damn conservative acting like a doorknob, I mean, I was the first person that said George Santos had to be kicked out of Congress. I mean, that's crazy shit. I'm not standing up for anybody who's a doofus. I'm not going to. That was the usual play for the media for like 100, 150 years. Now they're actually lying. And they're lying because they've basically been entrusted to be social justice warriors. That's partly because there's not a lot of older, senior people in the media anymore because they can't afford to keep them. So they hire younger people, and our younger people in college have been indoctrinated to the fact that conservatism is completely evil and the means justify the ends. That's the answer to that question. But if you're like my age, if you're in your 60s, and you've been reading the Wall Street or the New York Times all your life, you think, well, what has changed? Because you read the newspaper, it doesn't seem any different. It's just the things they're writing, the facts they're writing about are not true anymore, as by and large, completely. Now, the interesting thing that's happened with the last few days here, with this thing with Joe Biden and this Robert Hur report that came out last weekend, it does seem like, especially the New York Times, I mean, there's still people who are saying this is all BS. You know, Biden's a really sharp guy. We can see that he isn't. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to figure out this guy has some severe cognitive problems. Anybody watching this, and they've gotten markedly worse since he started his term. And some people would say it appears that his staff knew even then that there were some problems. But if you look at the tapes from 2020 from the campaign, he seemed relatively cogent. He did. This has all happened in like 2-3 years, you know. Now, I don't know if the stress of the presidency has actually accelerated this or not. That's for doctors to figure out. I have no idea. It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is it's very plain. And when I was going to show you the front page of Kong News in a few minutes as part of our sponsorship. But I don't know if it's still on there because the Kong News updates every 3 hours. And when we looked at it last night, literally while I was doing the demo, it updated right in the middle of it. The page rolls over and all of a sudden you got a bunch of different stories. So I don't know if it's still there. But there's a story, and I think it was from Hot Air. I can't remember. But the headline was very simple. If Joe Biden is not capable of standing trial, he's not capable of being president. And that's absolutely true. It's as simple as that. If they've determined that he does not have enough cognitive function to stand trial for those documents thing. And the other, okay, you're talking about lying, you know. So The Biden administration and Biden himself last Friday night got up and said, they've exonerated me. That's nothing could be further from the truth. That a report basically says he's guilty. It says the thing is they're not going to take it to court because they don't think, because he's so cognitively declined, they don't think they could convince a jury to convict him. No, according to that report, he's guilty of sin. And he's running around, they're running around telling people that he was exonerated. He wasn't. No, it's just that they're not going to try to try him. That's all. It's just one little example. So this, but this goes on and on and on. And then especially the Russiagate thing. I mean, this is really amazing for Trump. I mean, this is, you know, so they started like 3-4 days into his presidency. He had just been inaugurated. And I think 4 days later, they call up Michael Flynn and say, look, the FBI calls and said, we want to have a conversation with you about some shit that's going on. And Flynn apparently actually asked them, do I need my lawyer present? They said, no, this is just fine. It's just casual conversation. They came and had a casual conversation with him. He answered a few questions. They came back and arrested him. It's just bullshit. And this guy's like a war hero. I mean, my God, you know, he's talking about serving his country. So he blowed through millions of dollars to get him off the hook for this. And it's obvious that they did this because they wanted to send a message to anybody. Look, if we can bring down Michael Hill, Michael Flynn, we can bring down anyone. It was obvious they were trying to send a message to other people in the administration. It was just complete bullshit. So they made up a story. Hillary Clinton made up a story and sold it about the fact that Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians. And I have to get my shit together. Hold on just a second. And there's people at the New York Times who won Pulitzers reporting on this. In other words, they won Pulitzer Prizes for reporting on a fake story. None of it was true. None of it. And not only did they win these Pulitzers, they haven't given them back. And the Pulitzer Committee has not asked for them back. Remember Milli Vanilli? Remember them? It turned out they didn't sing on their album. Well, the Grammy people asked for the Grammys back. Yeah, you know, that's what you do, right? It was all a big lie, okay. But no, the Pulitzer Committee, no. New York Times still has those Pulitzers, even though the story was completely made up. And then you're wondering why people don't trust the media. Here's another example. I've been bitching about this for 3 years. Since Biden became president, January 21, CNN's ratings have gone down 90%. I did not misspeak that. The ratings have gone down 90% in 3 years. Now, they aren't even cracking 500,000 viewers on anything, even in prime time. And basically, and I've said this before, in the business of cable television, anything below 1 million people is basically zero as far as people watching. It doesn't count. If you're under 1 million, you're off the scale. And they're not even cracking 500,000. I mean, the whole thing, it's unbelievable. So what else do you want to know? The Los Angeles Times is losing $1 million a week. Not a month, not a year, $1 million a week. The Washington Post is losing $2 million a week, and they lost 25% of the subscribers last year. I have to make a correction here. I've said in the past they lost 25% of their subscribers in 1 month. It turned out that was wrong. Over the course of the last year, they lost 25% of the subscribers. This guy's writing this. He's writing this article, and it's Rick Schultz, and he is. I'm gonna post a link to this in our blog at jimandnight.com. His contention is that basically the game is up. People now have figured this out, and because of that, I mean the mainstream media is literally collapsing all around. This just came out today. Paramount Global, that owns CBS and Paramount Plus. Excuse me, I'm going to have a little. They laid off 800 people today. Hold on. There's 2,000 people that work for CBS News. They laid off 21% of their staff. You would have think we dropped a bomb on Hiroshima. And this is a complaint of mine. It always has been. For some reason, journalists think they should never, ever lose their jobs. They basically think they're entitled to employment. And that's actually one of the problems here as a personality type, like I was talking about before, is journalists are very, very entitled individuals. They think they're entitled to a job, and they think they're entitled to never lose it. And when 20 journalists lose their jobs, the world blows up. Whereas in the radio business, people get fired so often, it's not even, you just get used to it. but any rate, this is a really interesting article here, and you have to read it. There's a point to be made here that what we're doing here and what Tucker Carlson is doing and Adam Carolla and Joe Rogan, God bless me, I do not have their audiences, but still, the fact of the matter is collectively, we are making an impact. I talked to David Strom from hotair.com. He's a regular guest on the show, and I think we even talked about this on the air. You know, he said, talked about the fact that sometimes it gets depressing doing, especially you're reading about this stuff, the incessant lying, you know, and everybody in the conservative news business knows all about it. We do. But last night I was talking about this, and I'm going to end with this too before we go to Michael's interview. Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski on Morning Joe. Now that show, that's been on television for about 18 years. They're married now. They were not married to each other. They were married to other people, but they basically had an affair and broke off their marriages and married each other. When that show started, it was quite possibly easily one of the best talk shows in America, because you had Scarborough was a Republican, and Mika Brzezinski literally grew up in the White House. Her father was Zbigniew Brzezinski, who was the national security advisor for Jimmy Carter. And her and Amy Carter literally grew up in the White House. I mean, she's been a swamp creature her entire life. She grew up there, and she's a liberal. And they would argue, and it was great discussion. And so at some point, I've said this many times. I call it the Regis Philbin effect, because what happened with Regis, if you want to call it, happened to him. He had a great career, fantastic. You know, first of all, as far as I know, and I'm quite certain this is true, he never stopped any of his co-hosts. You know, now whether they would have wanted that, I have no idea. You know, he was kind of an older guy. He only died a few years ago. He was 80, I think 82 or 83 when he passed away. And this is kind of important to the discussion. When Live finally got syndicated and became popular, he was already in his late 50s. So he'd been doing this for quite a while. But Live, when he was on there, and maybe you remember this, if they were in a real pinch, and like Kathy Lee or Kelly or whoever the hell it was didn't show up or couldn't show up in the morning, they would have his wife do it. And Joy Philbin was a big band singer by profession. And so she was an experienced performer. And the problem wasn't that she wasn't any good at it. That's not the problem. She was perfectly fine. The problem is you got two married people who've been married 40 freaking years sitting next to each other. They don't have anything to say. You know, now my wife and I, we have a lot to say because I'm doing all the talking. Just ask her. But no, it's really true. You know, yeah, they had nothing. They have nothing to say. So it's a talk show. So you gotta talk. They did it only in desperation mode because they had to fill a chair. You know, and like I said, it's not her in and of herself. She was fine. So that was a problem. It was the chemistry. You had two people who were too familiar with each other. That's the thing. You don't want too much familiarity with the person you're sitting next to on television. You don't. Well, Scarborough and Brzezinski, they busted that rule. So at some point, they ended up in a hotel room somewhere. Who the hell knows what happened? And then at that point, they're stuck at each other. And they're married, and they divorced their spouses, and they're married to each other. And now, basically, to use a term which I can't couldn't use on the radio, but I could use here because we don't have to deal with FCC rules. He's pussy whipped. That's basically the deal. And not only that, he still claims to be a conservative. That's complete bullshit. I mean, he's bought this liberal line, hook, line, and sinker, so he's lying. And this show went so downhill. It went so downhill that I talked to him. We'll ask Jeff tomorrow about this tomorrow, too. Jeff Michael's on. Jeff says he watches it in the morning because of the comedy. He said it's so unintentionally bad, it's laughable. It's entertaining. I barely watch it anymore. I barely do. Okay, so, all right. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Well, we're going to put Michael Harrison on now. For World Radio Day, he's the executive advisor to the United Nations, actually to UNESCO, which stands for the United Nations Educational I can't remember. It's a subset of UNESCO is the cultural arm of the United Nations is what it is. So we're gonna put him on, and you're gonna like this. Seriously, you will. Here's a little bumper music. Entertain yourself. Okay, you know him as the editor, publisher, and founder of Talkers Magazine, but he's also now the You're the executive advisor. Is that what it is?
That's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. To the United Nations for World Radio Day. That's what we're talking about here. Michael Harrison, hello. Nice to see you again.
Great to be with you, Jim. And that title will run out as soon as World Radio Day is over. So I'll be done with my project working with UNESCO on World Radio Day.
And how much work was this for you? Like a year?
About 6 months. About 7 months worth of work.
This is about what, the 12th World Radio Day or something like that?
13th. It began in 2011. I know, don't the years get blurry after you get deep into the 20s? You know, it's like, wow, 2011 was 13 years ago.
Terrible.
I thought it was just all going to stop at 2000 and we'd be in that remarkable place known as the future.
That's right.
Am I right? When you were growing up, did you? 2007. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh, that's good.
Yeah.
Now, like, you know, it's an old car.
I know. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
so how did you get this gig, may I ask?
They came to me and asked me if I would do it.
Uh-huh, because you're fabulous and famous, right?
I don't know if I'm fabulous or famous. You made a remark to the audience before that you know him as. I don't know if anybody knows me as anything.
Well, you've been on here before.
You operate under the assumption that everybody watching knows everything that's happened on this show. Ignorance is bliss. I don't
oh my God!
Down, but you know,
stupid. You're right.
I go through life figuring out that nobody reads anything I write, nobody listens to anything I say, and nobody gives a damn about it.
Right?
It makes me feel very. You know him as.
I care. But you're right. I'm so stupid. Like,
no, you're not. No, you're not. You're just.
Oh
you're,
my
you're
God.
You're very enthusiastic and you're very well-meaning.
Oh yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'll take that. I will. Okay. So how did World Radio Day got started in 2011, right?
Right. Basically, the United Nations has what it calls designated international days.
Uh-huh.
And they honor television. They honor women in the workplace, all kinds of different things that are, you know, sociologically meritorious, if there's such a word as that. And basically, the premise is that radio is a major positive force of humanity. And this year's theme is called Radio, a Century of Informing, Educating, and Entertaining, which is really what radio does. And what I did basically in my role was put the history of radio together in a perspective that makes sense on the web page, and talk the radio language for broadcasters around the world. My words are translated into a number of languages to be able to take advantage of this endorsement by the United Nations, which basically says your medium is cool. Your medium is important. It's vital, because some people don't know what to make of media anymore, because there's so much change and there's so much turmoil and so much noise that they think that certain forms of media are on their way out or dying. And it's not the case. They're just evolving and merging and changing. And so I try to put it into perspective. And it's been very gratifying, because on one level, they actually listen to me. On another level, I listen to them. And I've learned an awful lot through the prism of the United Nations and UNESCO, just how diverse radio is around the world. And just how important it really is. I'm actually inspired by it. So it's been a good two-way street.
I was doing some reading on this earlier today, and I never thought of this, but I read an article on Wikipedia, I think it was, where they said that by 1960, virtually every family on the planet had a radio. And well, you know, it's easy to discount, you know, just kind of take that for granted. But when you think about that, holy shit. I mean, that's pretty amazing, you know?
It is to have that type of, the word is penetration.
Yeah.
That type of penetration into every home. Radio was the true definition of that which we call mass media. I don't know what the definition of mass media is anymore here in 2024. It's a very different world than the 20th century world of mass media. I think we just had recently the Super Bowl. I think that maybe the Super Bowl broadcast and the culture of the National Football League is about as close to a mass cultural event via the media that we would ever see anymore. It's fractionalized. People don't know what the number one song in the country is. People don't know what the top book on the best-selling chart is. Most people have never seen nor will ever see the movies that are nominated for Oscars. It's a fractionalized world where people live in bubble universes. And we didn't grow up in that kind of a world.
No, we didn't. But, you know? But is it bad? Is that bad? Because, I mean, I could, like, for example, what we're doing here, there's probably going to be about 100 different shows like this on Twitch tonight, you know, just this one night, you know. And they're going to be live too, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if most people take it as seriously as I do, but they're still doing it, you know.
It's not really bad. It's bad if it's bad for the individual involved in whatever the situation is. There's certainly something lost from a cultural standpoint by these changes, but one person's lost culture becomes another person's new culture.
Yes.
I call it the favorite pizza syndrome. You know, you talk to people about their favorite pizza, and it's usually the one they grew up with from the local joint in their neighborhood.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, or your favorite song might not have anything to do with music or musicology. It might have to do with where that song was playing in the history of your life.
Yeah.
So the subjectivity of culture, popular culture especially, but any kind of culture, is something that makes it really difficult to measure the goodness or badness of it. I try to, even though as I get older, I have my own cultural roots that I'm nostalgic about, I try not to be a merchant of nostalgia. I try to be forward thinking and think more of the past as history as opposed to the good old days.
Mr. Harrison, you're as forward thinking a man as I know. So
I appreciate that.
That's really, really true. So have you, this being World Radio Day, you know, just talking about what you're just talking about, the fractionalized culture, is that applying worldwide or is it just here in the United States? What's happening differently in the rest of the world?
Well, they don't call it the World Wide Web for nothing. The world, you know, as Marshall McLuhan said back in the 60s, it's becoming a shrinking global village, and time and space are disappearing. So this is happening around the world. It's just happening around the world in different at a different pace. Some places don't have access to the internet. Some places don't have access to Wi-Fi or some of the gizmos that we consider to be a major part of living. You know, everybody moves along at a different time, a different timeline, and especially during times of accelerated change like we're experiencing now, some people are left behind. Some people are at different cars in the train,
yeah,
so to speak. But yeah, it is happening worldwide. That's part of the big picture of this phenomenon of the fractionalization of culture and the speed at which people are able to communicate with each other and dip into the amazing amount of data that's available to us like that through these magical devices. Let me get that.
Yeah.
That we walk around carrying these like they're extensions of our arm, of our hand, you know.
Yeah.
God forbid you lose it or you're out in public without your phone.
Well, now, I mean, Apple just released their headset, you know. It's like people look nuts. But I'm
you're talking to each other.
That's right. I know. That's the other thing. You're right. People are walking down the street talking to each other, and that's been going on for about 10, 15 years now. And it's like, you know, and I'm just thinking, oh, my God, it's like we're all, hey, but I do have to ask you. So, you know, it's a century of radio. And I assume we're talking about commercial radio here, which goes back about 1920, right? Or are you actually dealing with the experimental period before that, too?
Well, it's a very good question, and there is no easy answer to it. Radio is radio. It's what you want it to be. Commercial radio goes back about 100 years. A lot of commercial stations have been celebrating their 100th birthday over the past year or so. So commercial radio is about 100 years old, but there was radio prior to that.
Yeah,
there was radio prior to that. And I did a lot of research on this. The concept of radio was being written about by forward-thinking theorists, philosophers, and scientists as early as the 1860s. There were people that proposed it's possible to send audio signals from one place to the other through the electromagnetic field. You know, they had the idea of the field, the electromagnetic field. And there were experiments of sending signals from one place to another through the magic of the airwaves, you know, without any, you know, no wires. It's just going through the thing about it. It's magic in the 19th century. So even though we celebrate 100 years and radio is going into its second century, the bigger picture of radio is that radio has its footprint in three centuries, the 1900s, the 1800s, and the 20th century, the 2000s, if you.
Yeah. One thing that the rest of the world has that's different than we do, and that is the rest of the world essentially adopted commercially shortwave radio, which is not really very popular in the United States. In your research, did you come to any conclusions or rationalizations of why that happened?
No, I don't know why it happened. It probably happened because there was more entertainment and there was more commercially financed, backed and promoted programming on radio. You have to understand, originally, the programming was designed to sell radios, not to sell products.
Yeah.
And even television, early television was designed to sell televisions. There were no televisions or radios out there. Which came first, the chicken or the egg, before there was the programming? So perhaps shortwave, I'm answering the question, figuring it out on the fly here. I don't know for sure, but I would imagine that shortwave fell into the hands and usage as a utility and a hobby, hobbyists. And as a utility in cases of the need for communication where there was no radio. And as a result, it took a different turn. But the commercialization of the airwaves is what led to both radio and television becoming icons of popular culture.
Have you, does World Radio Day encompass like ham radio too? Did you do any listening to that?
Peripherally. It's mostly commercial and public radio. You have to look at public radio because in some countries they don't have commercial radio. The government controls it. In other countries, it's a mixture of the two. Even the term community station has a different legal meaning in different countries. And one of the things that I learned is you got to be very careful with your words because you can miscommunicate because there's so many different languages. The United Nations is an amazing concept. You know, we criticize it because it may not conform to our immediate political interests. But when you think about it in the bigger picture, with all the agencies and UNESCO and the help that they do, and just the idea that there's a place that nations could come to communicate when there's strife and trouble, that's a pretty valuable institution and service that they provide. So I learned that there's a lot of different kinds of radio that are heard on AM and FM dials. And now, of course, as we go into the future, where we are heading very quickly, it feels that way, more so than ever before, the issue is, what is radio's future? And I throw the question back to the people in the radio industry, you've got to decide what radio means. What is the definition of this thing we call radio? A lot of people go, it's not radio anymore, it's audio. Well, that would be like driving down the highway and to look for a restaurant. It says food.
Yes, that's a good analogy. That's another one of my questions. So is podcasting the future of radio? Which I look at podcasting basically just as radio on demand, you know. But
if it is radio-esque, not everything that's podcasts is a podcast. It may be delivered as a podcast. A radio show that ran, you know, on Tuesday and is now being put out on Wednesday as a podcast, well, that's like, filming a record playing, you know.
Yeah.
All of these platforms mingle with each other. So we do have shows now that are basically within the culture of podcasting. They're made as original programs for people who are going to listen to this podcast. But we also use the delivery system of podcasting to put out radio shows or just instructional things that are not shows at all, that are kind of utilitarian. And one of the things I have found over the years as a publisher of communications trade magazines, which I've done all along my on-air career, I also published trades, is it's very important for industries to continue to redefine what they do and update the categories. If you don't update the categories, your whole category goes out of style.
Yeah.
So podcasting, I would say that podcasting is a modern form of communications that has grown out of the internet, that has a culture of its own, special programs that are made especially for that medium, but is also used as a delivery system for other audio products, one of them being radio. And podcasts can be an extension of radio. They can be produced by radio people and be radio-esque, but they don't totally coincide where they're one in the same.
Is World Radio Day paying any attention to the podcasting thing? Is that part of it?
Yes, World Radio Day. First of all, World Radio Day is a kind of a loose concept. It doesn't dictate what radio is. It is open to the proposition that radio is going through a period, as I've just described, of trying to find its identity within the many new forms of media that are emerging and causing the other forms of media that we all grew up with in the 20th century to become on the verge of obsolescence. So this is a very key part of the strategy to keep radio alive and pertinent.
So speaking of that, so that brings us to the whole thing about AM radio, which there's a move to take AM radio out of new cars. And there's been stuff, bills are proposed in Congress to stop this, mostly under the rationale that AM radio is used for emergency services. And it is, that's legitimate. But are we just talking about not letting an ancient technology die here? Is that?
Well, we are talking about not letting an ancient technology die. I mean, the pencil and the pen are ancient technologies. Suppose suddenly that all the companies that make pens say, we're not making them anymore.
Yeah.
No more pens. The keyboard has replaced the pen. And as a matter of fact, we don't even need brushes for painting anymore. We've got AI to do our art for us.
Uh-huh.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
AM radio is a lot more than just emergency utilization, but it is a first responder in emergencies. I don't want to take it away from that. But it's also a very vital delivery system of that thing we call talk radio, the most exciting format in all of radio. If it wasn't for talk radio, do you think that radio would be as big today as it is?
Well, yeah, especially. I mean, I could make an argument that talk radio is keeping the AM band alive, basically.
Yes, and the AM band has provided talk radio with a place where it can thrive.
Yes, right.
It doesn't have to be concerned with the audio, stereo, high-fidelity sound of FM, at least at this juncture. I think that there are also some programs on AM that are very important that are not on FM and are not elsewhere in terms of certain gospel and religious music, in terms of certain ethnic formats that keep people connected to their culture.
I'm actually glad you brought that up because, yes, AM radio has really been embraced by a whole bunch of different minority communities. I mean, it's like you go to the average major city and you scan the AM dial and you hear all sorts of different languages. I mean, it's really amazing.
Right.
And these aren't just like what you were saying. They're not just necessarily even low power, quote unquote, community radio stations. You know, there's because a lot of people commercially don't really want AM radio stations anymore. Some of these communities have bought these commercial radio stations up and they're actually in their own way, they're thriving under their own, you know.
Absolutely. They're current and important.
Yes, they are. That's right.
So take them out of cars, which is one of the places that people listen to and need radio, is really more about the automobile companies mistaking the difference between an AM radio and a CD player.
Yeah.
Or an 8-track player or a cassette player, which are obsolete technologies. But AM radio is not obsolete. It just is not the shiny new thing on the cutting edge of technological development, but it's being used and it's an industry and people depend on it. So my suggestion to the automobile manufacturers is, yeah, I understand where you're coming from. Just give it another 5 or 6 years. Give it. Wait a little bit longer. It's too soon to throw radio to the curb. And they seem to be listening. I mean, not just to me, but they seem to be listening. But ultimately, AM and FM radio will not exist in cars, and there'll be no way to keep them there.
That's true. I mean, at some point, probably FM will go away too.
FM will go the way of AM. When AM goes, FM goes. I mean, what is the difference between AM and FM? They're both over-the-air technology.
And yet the weird thing, Michael, is that you can't really get an internet signal a lot of places, even like in major cities, you know, just because you're driving down the freeway or something doesn't necessarily mean that you can pick up some sort of Wi-Fi or something. I mean, it's like very, very spotty. So it's like, it's kind of weird. So you're talking about
one of the major talking points in defense of radio staying in the cars.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing that happened with the car thing is that everyone just assumed they would build like wireless Wi-Fi into the dashboard, but nobody really seems to give a crap. People just hook their phones up to their cars.
Well,
you know?
it's not needed. The phone is the brain center.
Yeah.
It's your computer. I mean,
right.
I had said earlier in this conversation, I referred to them as phones. I was making fun. They're not phones. They're computers. They're computers that have a phone app in them.
Right.
They're not phones anymore. They're cameras.
Yeah.
And they're more than cameras. They're magical crystal balls.
Yeah.
If you had one of these and you were to pop up in the past before these were invented, people would think it's an oracle. They think that it's magic, that you're, a witch or a warlock.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. I mean, I've always said this. If you brought a 747 to Valley Forge with Washington and his troops there and landed the thing and said, look, it's all fueled up. You can have it. Just take it. You go. they would never, ever figure it out. Ever. Never.
They would think it's some type of a dragon.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
They would be frightened of it.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt.
And that was only 200 years ago, you know?
Yes, and right. That was America.
Yeah, yes. Yes, it was. Yeah, yeah.
So culture changes.
I'm going to ask you, what do you think 25 years from now, what do you think World Radio Day is going to encompass?
Oh, I don't think there'll necessarily be a World Radio Day in 25 years. I think the world will be so different in 25 years that it's almost impossible to predict. I think that media will be very fluid. And we won't be as hung up on whether a thing is a book or a radio or a television or a magazine or a movie seen on a screen. We won't even necessarily have screens. It's going to be all chips in our bodies plugged right into the parts of our brain that process the senses. And we're going to be like a hive. We're going to be like ants and bees who communicate with each other in ways that are so fast and so fluid. We can't even imagine it. And our culture is going to go in that direction. And the thing that we're going to have to be very careful of is maintaining individual freedom, individualism, liberty, and some kind of privacy with everybody being able to tap right into your brain. We're heading there now. We're giving up our privacy to have the conveniences of this new era, but the loss of privacy, as somebody who spent most of his career defending the First Amendment as being the bedrock of American freedom, I'm realizing that privacy is equal to free speech as the bedrock of freedom.
Some ways they're the same, aren't they, in a way?
They overlap, but the ability to speak your mind is quite different than the ability to somebody to know your mind.
Yeah, well put. That's well put. I think something, when that happens, something will be lost, and I'm glad I will be dead.
You might not be. They may discover something in the next year or two that will prevent you from the luxury of death.
They put a valve in my heart without cutting my chest open. You know, who knew they could do that? You know, so, you know, yeah.
We're so caught up in our culture that we think that that's what it is to be human. The definition of what it is to be human is even more complicated than the definition of what is radio. And if you were to come back 50 years from now or 100 years from now, you wouldn't be able to function. And you would say, what happened to culture? What happened to our history? What happened to the world I know? And you wouldn't be able to function. It would seem that foreign to you.
Yeah.
So everything that we think of as being the way things are is dust in the wind. It's going to change. And on one level, you want to be attached to your roots and to your culture. It's important to us. It's what humanity is about. On the other level, don't get too attached to it. Because it's going to leave you in the dust.
Yeah. Well, now I'm depressed. So
I'm so sorry.
It's a great way to end this. But we're not actually ending it, because now we're going to play your music video. So what is the song is called? What again?
Okay. I, as you may remember, as the people that watch you and listen to you, they know everything about me. In addition to being a world's unknown editor and publisher and broadcaster, I'm also the member of a rock band that goes all the way back to the late 60s, early 70s, called Gun Hill Road from New York. And we still exist, and we put out songs in the platform that loves us is talk radio, because we're musical. We're very good musically, I think, at least what I hear.
Oh, I know, you are.
But our songs are about issues. Our songs deal with current event issues, and I participate with Steve Goldrich, Paul Reich, Brian Coonan, and me, Michael Harrison, are the four members of Gun Hill Road, and we're a partnership, and we collaborate on the writing, on the singing. It's all original material, and we have a song out that's called Over the Radio Waves, and it is basically a two-minute public service announcement that came out about 10 days before this particular program was recorded, and it's got thousands of views around the world. We made a video of it at overtheradiowaves.com. Overtheradiowaves.com. Mm-hmm. You're going to play the video, right?
And, yes, we're going to play it.
It's about radio and Radio Day.
We're going to post it on our blog, too, for people to come see it after the fact. But the other thing is you're talking about you're getting played on talk radio stations. These music videos you guys are doing are masterful. They're really cool.
Thank you.
Now, is this one, did you use some AI on this one too?
A little bit of AI. Some of it is just hand-rendered art, and some of it are photos. And we used AI. We have a song that we did 6 months ago called I Got a Line in New York City. I'm the lead singer on it. It's very jazzy and horn-driven and funky, and it's about the life of a Broadway actor. And he got a line in New York City, one line in a play, and it's kind of a provocative title. Sounds druggy, but it's you got a line in New York City, and the play closed in 2 weeks. It's kind of a fun song. But the hook for the video on that was when that came out 6 months ago, AI was the cutting edge thing. Everybody was talking about AI, so we made the video completely AI.
Yeah.
And I went around on a lot of shows talking about AI as the hook. Now. AI is just an option. Isn't it funny how 6 months later, AI, we're used to it, has a certain comic book look to it.
Yes.
And so this is, we're beyond just AI, but we use AI. And we have a song coming 2 songs from now called AI, about artificial intelligence. Our next song, which is going to come out in about 2 or 3 weeks, and I think you're going to want to talk about it with me.
I will. For sure.
It's called Damn Scammers Get Off My Phone. And it basically it calls for the death of scammers. They should die. It's very it's a guy that's crazed, you know, get off my phone.
Hey, let me ask you something. You know, we're talking about the fact that okay, your music's getting played on talk radio, but these music videos are so incredible. So like shows like I play them. And so what do you call what I'm doing here? It's like, it's kind of radio. It's kind of television. Does anyone have any sort of, as far as I know, no one's come up with a term for what kind of broadcasting this is.
This is called video broadcasting. You are making videos. Videos are podcasts that incorporate video. We tend to think of, or video podcasting. This is a show. It has elements of radio. We call it in talkers talk media.
Uh-huh.
And I would say that what you're doing at this point can be aptly described as a talk video show. And that's what it is.
Yeah, actually, I've never thought of that term, talk video. I've never thought of that. That's mm-hmm. good. Yeah, yeah. Kind of a... as a, you know, not a pose, but a compliment to talk radio. Thank you. I'm going to use that. Thank you very much.
Run with it because it's a wild west. It's a frontier. It hasn't been fully defined yet.
No.
And I don't have time to sit around defining everything. I spent a lot of years doing that.
Yeah.
But it's
a good reason to drink scotch. That's what I think, you know. Sit around and drink scotch and define stuff. Oh, Michael Harrison, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Talkers Convention in June.
That'll be fun. It'll be great to see you in person again. Isn't it wonderful, though, that we have platforms like this for friendships and, you know, relationships in business and personal ones to be able to develop without having to be in the same place?
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
A long time ago, they would call this television, you know. Remember they talk about someday in the future people will be seeing each other over the phone.
Yeah.
You remember in Stanley Kubrick's 2001?
Yes, I do. I was just video phone they have. That's right. And they were using a regular cathode ray tube, and you know, it's just so stupid. And man, I could go on forever, Michael. I could talk to you forever. You know, I probably shouldn't. You know,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. So we're now. You and I are going to say goodbye, and as soon as we do that, we're going to play the music video. So for those of you watching, here we go.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
on. Now the day has just begun. Voices in the air, rising with the morning sun. I go about my day, and I know that I belong. The signal's strong, and we all stand together over the radio waves.
World Radio Day, so save the day. United Nations and UNESCO going to celebrate. Inform, entertain, and educate into its second century. A lifeline called diversity. Now more than ever universally. Audio messages around the wheel through the electromagnetic field. Radio's important like never before. February 13, 2024. Mark it on your calendar and don't delay. Let's all celebrate World Radio Day. Tune in to hear what everybody's got to say.
Times can be tough when you're far away from town, but still I hear your voice, and there's comfort in the sound. I listen as I go, the words and music free my soul, and I feel whole, and we all stand together over the radio waves. And we all stand together over the radio waves. And we all stand together over the radio waves. Yeah,
that was Gun Hill Road at the end there. That's their song Over the Radio Waves that they did for World Radio Day. I forgot to promo that ahead of time, but man, that all went pretty smooth, didn't it? And our thanks to Michael Harrison for being just a fascinating guy. What did we cover there in 37 minutes? It was amazing. You know, he's right about the future. First of all, if you're right, he's right if you're my age. Michael and I are roughly the same age, you know. In 1970 or 65, the year 2000 seemed like the future. It just did. And now we're 24 years into it. And, you know what? I still can watch. I'm watching Two and a Half Men. Anyway, thanks to Michael for that. Yes, today is World Radio Day, and he's a big part of that. So I haven't talked up Michael a lot. Besides the fact that Michael founded Talkers Magazine, which is now the preeminent trade publication for talk media in America, he's also credited with inventing what's called the AOR music radio format, stands for album-oriented rock. He invented that in the 1920s, I think, in a San Francisco radio station. I can't remember. But he's done a lot of stuff. Just a really amazing guy. And yeah, you saw the music video, and isn't that striking? You know, we're going to put that on our blog too, so you'll get a chance to watch it and on demand if you want. It's also on YouTube too. So just really great. I didn't get a commercial in. Here's the deal here. We got a little bug on this in this whole thing. I have to. Okay, there it is. That's the front page of Clunk News. And there's something on the front page you'll see. It says breaking. And I keep doing this. You can't see my cursor. What am I doing? But, you know, I'm pointing at it. You can't see it. But the House of Representatives did impeach Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, late tonight. I think that just happened about 2-3 hours ago, I think. Now, Why did I bring that up? Because, here's the deal. It's not, I guess that's important. It isn't really, because first of all, the Senate is not going to convict him. They're not. It's just not going to happen. So he's not going to lose his job. And then the real on top of things on that is that he's not driving this thing. you know, he's the point man and he's taking the brunt of it. I'm sure that somebody in the administration told him, look, we got your back. You know, just stand there and answer the questions, smile and take it. You're not going anywhere, because he's basically just doing what he's told. That's all there is to it. He's not the driving force behind this at all. So it's just, I don't even think it's that important. So we just, I mean, I just told you everything you need to know, and I don't think there you need to know anymore. There's no reason to talk about it anymore. It's like, I mean, nothing bothers me more than cable television news or talk shows that talk endlessly about something when they have no additional facts or no perspective, no unique perspective on it. There's no perspective to have here. They impeached him. He's not going to be removed, and he's not driving it. And there you go. That's all you need to know. I just told you in 45 seconds. Anyway, this is the front page of Kong News. It changes every 3 hours. They update. They import news from 75 different news sources. All the headlines are original. All the photos are from the articles that they're linked to. And there's no interstitial pages or anything like that. You click on the headline, you go directly to that article on that news site. It is, as news aggregators go, I'm not exaggerating, it's the best single news aggregator on the internet, period. It just is. Check that out if you can. It's at conk.com. That's conk.com. I use it. I'm the former editor there. I'm very happy and proud of my association with the organization. And yeah, they do a really good job. So check that out when you get a chance. All right. So what do we got here? It's the C block. And I got a couple things I want to talk about. And I kind of alluded to this when we were, Oh, Jesus. I've lost my notes. Christ. Oh, shit. Call me up and talk to me, okay? Audio line 563-999-3435. Text line 408-458-5088. I'll put them back on the screen. Hold on. There you go. I'm kind of pissed off. I got a few bugs in the system here. I can't retrieve my notes. But at any rate, there's two things. I previewed this in the A block about the fact that so they sent this satellite up to test this propulsion system that's based on quantum physics. They're calling it a quantum drive. And the thing is, so, you know, Newtonian physics works that equal input as output. So the thing is, and the reason this is the way rockets work, so they push propellant out, and because they're pushing something out, they go forward, right? That's what it works. Now, supposedly, this doesn't work that way. It doesn't push anything out. It just moves. But they've lost communication with the satellite, so they can't test it. So they've tested, I've got a problem with my eye. They've tested this on Earth, but they want to test it in space because that's where they're going to use it. It worked on Earth, so who knows? So then the other thing I want to bring up tonight, that this is last week, so there was another classified hearing in Congress for congressmen on the UFO situation, and apparently a bunch of people left that meeting confused as hell. So, and, you know, no one's talking about it. And, you know, here's the deal. You wonder, why doesn't stuff leak out of these classified meetings? Because if they catch who leaked it, you could end up in prison for 30 years. It's a serious, serious crime, and it's a serious punishment. Nobody wants to risk that, especially all you have to do is keep your mouth shut and don't say anything. So this has always been this is the thing about people say, well, you know, people can't keep a secret. The word would get out. No. If you're threatened with 30 years in jail, yeah, you'll keep a secret. You will. The other example that's been used, and it's really important, during the Second World War, the Manhattan Project, when they developed the atomic bomb, there were 110,000 people that worked on that project. 110,000 people, not a single person blabbed. Nobody knew. Nobody ever found out before the day they dropped the bomb on Hiroshima what was going on. Now, to the credit of those people or the people who organized this, most people didn't even know what they were working on. They didn't, but nonetheless, they still had secrecy oaths. They still had to sign the non-disclosure agreements. So, but most people didn't know it was a bomb. Remember, supposedly the crew of the Enola Gay did not know what they were going to drop. They were told in mid-flight what it was. So I mean, maybe that's you can qualify that, but the fact of the matter is 110,000 people did not blow a secret. So anyway, so the Congress met with the people on the UFO thing. So what they're saying is that supposedly the inference from all the shit that's come out of this is that this is way, way more complicated than anybody has previously discussed. Like, for example, and David Grush has been very, very clear on the usage of words. He has not used the word extraterrestrial, and he won't. And so people say, well, if it's not extraterrestrial, what is it? Well, the apparently, and this is just speculation, there's some evidence to this, but there's no confirmation. Apparently, they're talking about interdimensional shit. That means that two different scenarios, scenes, even civilization are basically living in the same space, but they can't access each other. Or in this case, one has learned how to access the other. Humans are only, we are cognizant of only four dimensions, width, height, length, and time. According to string physics, there's 11 dimensions in our universe, and we can't access the other seven. Maybe with machines, but you have to understand this. It's the way we're wired as human animals. We will never be able to perceive any of the other dimensions. Maybe with some sort of, a hardware or an adapter or something like that, but never naturally. It's never going to happen. So there's a possibility that we're sharing this space with another people who live in another dimension. We would never, ever see them. I mean, you're literally talking about two different completely cultures templated on the same spots on Earth. Now, that sounds like crazy shit, right? Yeah, that's tinfoil hat stuff. But this is what they're maybe actually talking about. You know, the other alternative has been that there's been a lot of people who have speculated that a lot of these UFOs, and maybe all of them, are humans from the future that have figured out time travel and they're coming back here. And believe it or not, I mean, well, whether you believe that or not, my point is that's more believable than the interdimensional shit. And we don't know how to do that either. It's really, really crazy stuff if you stop and think about it. There's been rumors going around for years that there's people living, you know, I know the hollow earth theory thing. I still remember reading about it when I was a kid. I thought, oh, that's just bullshit. There's nobody living in the Earth, or there's nobody living in Antarctica. But there might be, which is just, yeah. I mean, we have put the tinfoil caps on now, folks. But the thing is, the reason I'm bringing this up and the reason I'm saying this stuff is because there's evidence that this is what they're talking about to Congress. And, you know, no one... The congressman came out of there just baffled. They said, you know, some of them said, I don't understand it. Some of them said, it's unbelievable. A few of them said, a few of them said that it didn't move, the quote was, it didn't move the needle. In other words, like, what were they expecting? You know, hot dogs? I don't know. Anyway, yeah, this is crazy shit now. We've gotten to the crazy shit level. So supposedly, David Grush met with 60 very important people in an apartment in Manhattan, Midtown Manhattan, I think around December and January. This was an off-the-record conversation, but it was not classified because none of these, at least as far as I know, none of these people are actually in the military. Like, these are Elon Musk and Bill Gates types. You know, with 60 people. And he told them it was all interdimensional stuff. That's apparently what he told us. That told them during this meeting. There was no, threat to talking out of this meeting. This was not classified. So that's supposedly what came out of that meeting. I don't know. It's just there's just too much stuff going on. But now that said, you know, the thing is, here's my speculation, which is based on an enormous amount of evidence that I've collected. And that is, you think a few aliens are flying to Earth? No, I think a shitload of them are coming here. And most of them are cloaked, and most of them are in orbit, and we never see them. And they're flying all over the place. My evidence to that is, and I've mentioned this many times, and that is local TV film crews go out to film the state fair or whatever they're going out to film, and they're setting up their cameras, and they're pointing some of the cameras to the sky because they're laying there, they're on, and they get back to the station, and they go through the footage, and then they'll say, what's that? They don't see it at the time, but they see it in the footage afterwards. And this is apparently happening on a daily basis all over the country. People are going out to just record shit. This is during the daytime, and they end up seeing stuff in the sky on their footage on the playback on the way back. So, yeah. And also the other thing, too. Now, this is also tinfoil hat shit, too, but I'm going to bring this up. Supposedly, and John Lear said this, and there's a lot of people tell you John Lear's nuts. John Lear he died a few years ago. He was also the single most decorated pilot in the history of the U.S. military. He's the only person in the U.S. military after the time he died who had flown every single aircraft in the inventory. He's the only person. He was basically the most brilliant military pilot of his generation. Okay? So we can say he's crazy, but man, he's brilliant crazy if it is. But he said that his sources had told him that the sources of the military had identified 80 different species of extraterrestrials and that they were all coming here. And I've said this before, you have to understand, they're anywhere from 200 to a million years ahead of us. There's no, there's no uniform reason any of this should be uniform. There isn't. You know, our planet's relatively young for the universe. So it would not be inconceivable in the least that you would have a civilization that's a million years ahead of us. Well, just like Michael Harrison, and I'm going to wrap this up by doing a little callback here. Just like Michael Harrison was talking about, 25 years and 50 years, you won't basically recognize American culture if America still exists. I'd like to hope it would, but culturally, you wouldn't recognize them. You came back, or even if you live that long, and he's right about that too. I mean, there's a good possibility that we might have our lifespan might be greatly extended in the last next 20, 25 years. So you think that's happened? We've only had the smartphones. He was talking about the computers in your pocket. We've only had them for 15 years. You know, radio is 100 years old. We've only had radio. What happens if you tack 10,000 years on top of that or a million? You know, what does your technology look like then? Holy shit. I mean, you know, there are people say, I have friends who say, no, they're not, the aliens aren't coming here because you can't fly faster than the speed of light. Yeah, that's a joke. All right, so tomorrow night, we got Vladimir Putin's coming on, the president of Russia. He's going to talk about love for Valentine's Day. Yeah, he is, I know. Did he talk about love with Tucker? No, he didn't. There was no love involved. They did not talk about love, but he's going to talk about it here on our show. And Jeff Meyer, the CEO of Cont News, our sponsor, he's coming on for his monthly meeting. We shoot the shit. He's always got something interesting to say. You may not agree with him, but seriously, he's always got an interesting take on everything. So anyway, that's tomorrow night. And Thursday night, Nathan Wooster from the Epoch Times is going to be joining us. Yeah, we got guests, man. We're pretty much filled up for the entire month again. Couple days at the very end, I'm still looking for people, but you know, we got it going on. I want to thank Michael Harrison again. The music video we're going to post on our blog. I'm going to post the article I was talking about on the A block too I'll post that on the blog too, where I link to it on Barrett Media News about the fact that legacy media basically might have just completely gone to hell. It might be the beginning of the end, and it might. So, and God bless us as we're still doing this. And I was looking at the playback of me and Michael. God, I got a big head. Now, yeah, I was closer to the camera. I know. And I do this partly on purpose because the thing, no one ever thinks about this. Half the people that watch this are watching on a tiny little screen on their phone. You know, it's just like, or the early days of television, you know, half of you are watching on a screen that's 2 by 3 inches. So I think I should get close. That's what I think. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care.